Blog Talk Radio.
You're looking thin anyways, and you stare right through me. Surprised to be leg to leg.
Welcome, this is she, and I want to thank you for joining us today. We have special guest Matteo Lundgren, and today he is going to share what he has received from learning how to build with the earth. He has been studying Cobb structures and learning how to build with Mother Earth and discovering the beauty and the energetics that transfer when we start building with the materials that she so graciously has given us. So without further ado, let's dive in with Matteo.
All right. Well, Matteo, I'm so excited that you're here with us today.
Yes, I am also very excited to be speaking with you. In whichever way this conversation leads, I know it's with the flow, and it's going to not only inspire us, but hopefully will prove to inspire others as well.
Yes, I think so, because you're quite an inspiring human being that I appreciate, knowing that you're out there spreading love and enthusiasm. So what I've really loved about you is that you went on this trek. I don't know when it started, but you went on this trek and I started observing you from afar, and you've been building with the earth and creating Cobb houses or structures, all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like you to share a little bit, one, for the listener, what that is, because they may not know. First of all, we'll start there.
Let me sort of start from the beginning, because earth and building and any kind of natural home building construction method is really incredible art that I am so passionate about. But it sort of starts, my story sort of starts a little bit differently. And it starts with me getting a master's degree and one of my mentors sitting across from me saying one thing to me. We were having this conversation about a bunch of things, and he looked at me straight in the eye and he said, you know, the more uncomfortable you are, the greater potential there is to learn. And I was sitting there going, what? I never heard anybody sort of tell me to become uncomfortable. And it was the first time that I was like, huh, so I adapt, I grow in that uncomfortable place, that place that I feel like I've been running away from as fast as I can prior to this statement. So I sort of really took that to heart, and I sort of made this vow, like, I've got to do something with my life. Like, I can't just get comfortable. I have to go find that uncomfortable spot, because when you do find that uncomfortable spot, there's just this incredible, incredible scape of knowledge that becomes available to you. And so that's been my mission since I graduated with my master's degree, and it's brought me to Colorado. It's brought me back to New York. It's brought me into therapy. I was a therapist for a couple years in New York, and it brought me into the culinary world with zero experience. I was like, all right, I think I just have this unwavering passion to cook and to have a relationship with food. And so, hey, I'm going to quit my job and just go into a restaurant. It's my path has sort of been that way, and it hasn't been always the most comfortable, is basically my point here. But what it has proved is it's afforded me relationships around this country, and in every space I find myself in, I'm enthusiastic about what I'm doing, because I refuse to put myself in a position, or at least that's my motto anyway. I don't want to put myself in a position where I just become part of the status quo. And as much as I'm trying to reject that, I also appreciate it. And there's this sort of balancing that takes place. And so if we go back to the story of my newest adventure, which is in earthen building, which is in natural home building, it took place about 300 days ago. And I just wanted to learn how to build my own home. And there was something about the conventional building world that just didn't resonate within me. There's a lot of waste in the conventional building world. There's a lot of the conventional building world does not take into account the environment. It doesn't take into account of the workers that are building these things. It just takes into account one thing, and that's speed. It's always about getting things done as fast as possible without considering the materials being used, just how do we do it. And if this is the way everybody else does it, then this is the way we do it. There's a real cost to building that way, and it didn't feel right to me, so thus my exploration in the natural home building world. And then I met this man who's a Cobb builder, and he took me on as an apprentice, and that's when my 300 days began.
I'd love for you to share a little bit about being an apprentice, and I love the fact that you, I love your teacher that said, go to the uncomfortable spot. It's like, we are two kindred spirits. I tend to like run towards uncomfortable now.
Yeah, I mean, with that, I mean, it doesn't make everybody else so comfortable. They're like, Mateo, what are you doing? You have a job here, or, hey, there are people offering you this and that, and why are you doing something you know nothing about? You are a therapist, Mateo. Get back into psychology. And I'm like, well, this is just a facet of this. This is just an extension. I mean, everything is an extension.
Right.
There's nothing lost in any of our journeys. I mean, people might look at me and they might romanticize things that I do because I travel from here or there, and they're, oh, I wish I could do that, and I romanticize others the same way. But what we have to realize is that this is just us living, the day to day. And we have choices each day, the way we breathe, the way we eat, the way we interact with all everything that comes into our presence. So this is one way I engage in it right now, and it's something that really fuels me. And I'm just going to roll with that, as uncomfortable as it is. How much money are you making, Mateo? Are you going to make any money? I mean, you could make money doing something else. And I know these things, and I'm like, shoot, I do need to make some money probably. And I find avenues to support myself. And I think by putting myself into that uncomfortable space, those avenues just make themselves available to me because I'm just letting go of it. I'm just, hey, I've got to survive. Let's see what happens next.
Yep. Well, and this is a really important key for right now because we're watching on a global level. As before we got on this broadcast, I don't typically watch news or TV. I don't even watch TV, but any of that because it, to me it's a puppet show. And so I heard the broadcaster say, sorry, it just kind of cracked me up. They're like, we're going to decide if we're going to raise the debt ceiling today, or we're going to wait 3 months before we crash the world economy. And I'm like,
right.
I'm like, wow. I'm like, this is epic. Like,
yes.
I'm, like,
yes.
I'm like, did they just say that? Like,
yes, they did. They did. And it's quite a story we tell. I mean, the media tells this story in a certain way. You can listen to one speech and listen to one person's interpretation of it and then another person's interpretation of it. Are you Democrat or Republican? And it doesn't matter who interprets it. Whoever's listening to it determines what it actually means. So so it's like so arbitrary in some respect. And also it's important, obviously, as everything is. But here we are sitting in this world, this nation, this placed, and we are meant to interpret it the way we will. And gosh, when I watch those news stories, those newscasts, you're like, what kind of story are they creating here? I mean, it's like, my God, I've got to go run. I've got to run away from this.
Yeah, so I don't know. I know that's a serious matter, but it didn't,
yeah.
I just, well, it may not be. The reason I bring that up is because what you're doing and that you're finding new ways and illustrating to people that you can do this. And at the same time, you're bringing back something really interesting, taking the time to become the apprentice or to learn a trade very detailed versus going the fast route, you know, spending $29.99 on a infomercial on the internet and saying that you're an expert at that
right.
point. So if you can share what you have learned thus far from building with the earth
mm-hmm.
and about the possibility of sustaining self in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, it starts with this process over product mentality. And it's a balance between those two things. I'm not saying the product mentality is wrong, but I mean, as in everything, this is a big process. Living is a process. A relationship with your partner is a process. And we become, with in the building world, which I'm going to focus our conversation today mostly on, but I want everybody to realize that this is a metaphor for everything, in my opinion. But in the building world, it has become seriously a product-oriented space where it's about building a house really quickly, and there's no relationship felt in that. As cheaply as we can build it, and then let's put some money into it so then we can sell it. Oh, don't use that room. We don't want to disturb that room because that will lower the value of this product. And that was like sort of when somebody brought that up to me, that just that kind of perspective, I went, oh, my God, that's the world we live in. That's where I actually spend my time, in houses like this, that the products aren't considered in it. And I guess the process of building an earthen home is what's so incredibly sexy to me, because it's just like the natural world. You're growing a house rather than producing one. And I think that was, oh, my God, you're growing a house? Because in the conventional world, what happens is we build these stick frames, and then we build the roof, and then we fill it in, and nothing in the natural world grows like this.
Right.
Everything in the natural world starts from the ground, from the roots. And then from that root grows farther or closer and closer to the sun. And just like in a natural home, which is what is so sexy, is that you start with a foundation and you put your hands on all of the material. You know, there's no machines in this process. There can be, obviously. But what I find the most attractive, what really, you know, like enlivens my spirit, is when I get to touch everything with my hand. And I don't need a tool. And when somebody told me that, I'm like, I don't need tools? I don't need to know how to use this machine that could kill me? I mean, I use my feet, I use my hands to build a wall that slowly goes up, just like the natural world worked. And for me, that was like, oh, my God, that's the way why haven't we always been building this way? Because nature uses these tricks that really makes us feel like we belong. And everything in nature sort of belongs in that way. And, gosh, I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like poetry to me. It's sort of like music.
Studied architecture and environmental design. And our discipline was very focused, well, technically, like from acoustics to structures to all that stuff, but very conceptually focused also, philosophical, creating poetics with space. So when I'm hearing you speak, that's what I resonate with, back to the conception of a home. If you can share, as you're touching and molding this earth to become a home, which in Native American tradition is considered the womb, which is the center of creation for all of us, where we're created from, can you share a little bit with the listener about that process and maybe what you've touched on as you become intimate with these materials that you're creating a dwelling with?
Yeah, I mean, let me start with what the material is. And with my within my world, it's cob. We're using cob, and cob is an old Welsh term meaning lump of mud. So what this lump of mud is a mixture of clay, sand, straw, and water. And when you mix these components together, what you get is this material that becomes nature's concrete. And so when I use this material, when you stick your hands in it, when you're mixing that clay and sand together, what happens is that becomes the material of your home. And it's the same material that in the southwestern United States, I think more people are familiar with adobe homes. But there's a big difference between adobe and cob. And the biggest difference is it's the same materials, but what they do is they fire bricks out of that clay, sand, and straw. They fire the bricks, and then they use a mortar to stack these bricks on top of each other. The problem I see with that is that now you've created cold joints between each of these bricks, these thousands of bricks that make up a home. And in like an earthquake, for example, those cold joints can crack and crumble, and you've got, as we see in all those missions and southwestern United States, they're destroyed. What Cobb is you mix this batch and you don't fire it. What you do is you build a wall slowly all the way up and all the way around the entire foundation of your home up into the roof. And you don't let it dry. What you do is with that straw, because the straw in the mix becomes the tensile strength that binds the clay and the sand mixture together, what happens is that wall becomes one adobe brick, one monolithic structure. And it is so incredibly strong that it's sort of really, when you stand in it, you feel protected. And there's no other way to describe the feeling except for if you go stand in one yourself. But it is one of, oh man, it's like truth bumps in your body. It's like you breathe it in and you're like, this is the place I want to live in. This is a place where I want to spend time in. It feels intimate. It feels love. You can feel the earth. And to go back to what you just brought into the picture, in the spiritual sense, we come from the earth. And we go back to the earth when we're done with this life in our physical bodies. But for me, that saying, which I've heard so many times, then I felt just being with this clay that I was supposed to live with this earth, that I was supposed to live within the earth. And it really was a really touching moment for me when I felt that for the first time. And so when that intimacy plays out, when you're mixing it with your hands and you're mixing it with your feet, and then you're throwing it to your friends and you're dancing with music as you stuff it into these walls and you're building up and you're watching this structure form and grow, it's just quite a process. And for me, it's an art. And for me, it's a relationship. And it's way more than a product. And it's the process that makes me feel so alive when I'm in it. And it's something that I hope to spread to many others who are like, you build with mud? And they have questions about it, and I want to share what I know and what others already know and what we just know intuitively and biologically, that this is these are the places that really feel good to live in, really feel good.
And if you can share one of the projects you've worked on in this past 300 days, building when creating and constructing something, you've become so engaged with it that it's like you're birthing a child. If you can share what you feel you gave and received, and then those who have stayed in the dwelling, what they're receiving from your creation.
Well, I'll tell you a story. We were building this Cobb cottage in Southern Oregon for a 15-year-old definitely a man, on his parents' property, and we were building it, and there was so much sweat, right? I mean, when you build with Cobb, it's definitely a labor-intensive process, but you engage in materials unlike the conventional building world where you're engaging with the machine to cut the wood, and there's all these big, loud sounds, and you have to wear earmuffs, and you've got to wear protection, and, hey, don't touch that product because it might cause some sort of disease, and there's just no toxic materials we're dealing with in the Cobb building world. So we're building this cottage in Southern Oregon, and the walls get about 8 feet high, and we've probably worked for about 3 weeks, and we've got windows in, and we've got the ceiling beams from the timber that we harvested in his forest hanging across the ceiling, and we were like, you know what would be great right now is to have a little ceremony in here, but a ceremony of dance. And so what we did is that we put all of our intention, like all of this hard work that, I mean, trust me, when you're working for 10 hours a day, you have feelings of like, oh, there's got to be an easier way to do this. You have to go through that. That's part of the process. But when you get up, what we did in that is that we danced in this house all night long. We set up lights like through a little generator that we had, and we were dancing with music as loud as we could play it, and we were just pushing it into this wall. And what happens is when you have such an intimate relationship with the building material that when it finally goes up, when this house was finally completed, you could walk into that home and you could feel that music in the walls. And I know that might sound a little far out, but it truly was there. That music was there. You could feel, because we harvested all of our lumber from his forest which wasn't that much. It was a couple Douglas fir trees. You could when you touch that tree, you could feel how Julian stripped the bark from it. You could just feel the clay. When you touch the clay, you could feel people's feet that were mushing into it to connect the sand and clay and straw together. And what was most alive about these homes, and this one in particular, was that there must have been seeds in the clay at some point, because out of the wall, in some spots, grass was growing out of it.
Mm.
And just to see that, you were like, oh, my God, there's grass growing out of this wall. That's amazing, because the clay hadn't completely dried out, so there was still room for that to happen. I mean,
for organic life.
Yeah. And you're just like, wow, these walls are alive. And that's what's great about it. That's the feeling you get when you walk into it, is that the house is actually alive. It truly is. And it breathes just like all living creatures breathe, because there's nothing to block that airflow, because Cobb breathes. That's one of the design features of Cobb, is that it's breathable.
Mm.
So the moisture in the air can move in and out of it. It moves in and out of it in a really slow rate, which is why the thermal nature of Cobb is so amazing. But it's alive and it's breathing. And there's something really powerful when you acknowledge that standing in it and when you're building it. And for me, wow.
Mm.
Wow.
It's beautiful, because basically you've melded a structure out of natural components and
mm-hmm.
realized their life force in that process. Having that awareness or experience, if you can share how maybe that's transitioned your awareness with all things, that they have energy in them, and that how we can relate to them a little bit differently. You've been always so great, even how in the past we spoke about water, which we're going to do a little bit again today, but how we can change our position in a moment to change the vibration of an experience.
I mean, I can answer that question in lots of different ways. I'm going to start with this concept that my teacher, my mentor, called certain materials, and he said materials all have this embodied violence to them. And you have to factor in the intensity of the manufacturing process, you have to factor in the amount of energy used to extract these materials, the distance the material travels to get to sites, and then the working conditions of every person that touches the material. And when you place these materials in your home, what's happening is you're creating a vibration in your home that you might not consciously be aware of, but it is there on a subconscious level. And if you have a house, and we've all walked into homes that maybe are really nice looking, or at least an idea-wise, you walk in, but there's something not right about being in that home. And maybe it's that's all the stainless steel from China that sits in somebody's kitchen or whatever, and there's a strange feeling when you walk into that. And if you replace that with a porcelain sink from your Goodwill, is there something more peaceful about that? And you can walk into peaceful homes and not really understand why that is. And it's just there intuitively, subconsciously. And I think it has to do with the natural component of design. Just a quick example is like hard right angles. In nature, those just don't exist. And they're actually they're just not that efficient. They trap heat in right angled corners. And subconsciously, what you'll see in many people's homes is that we'll kitty corner things in the corner to soften that for us. Because we don't like those right angles. There's something about it that just doesn't feel right. So with Cobb homes and with nature in general, you have these rounded corners that allow for that transfer of energy, of heat, of sound. And there's something that really feels natural about it. There's something biological within us that makes us feel, I don't know, safer. I can give examples from that. In the natural design world, I can just give example after example of that. From sheltered roofs, where instead of flat ceilings, you have that sheltered roof. And what that tells us intuitively is that we are protected. you can go, and that's why people like love to sleep up in attic spaces underneath that, because there's something about it. And I love that mystery, that poetry behind all of this design stuff that, at least in my world, I wasn't paying attention to until I was, I don't know, 27 years old, 28 years old. I just was living in spaces. And we've all had the experience, maybe not all of us, but I think many people have had the experience of when the electricity goes out in your house and all of a sudden there's a quiet. There's a quiet that you've never even knew existed in your home. It's like the refrigerator humming's off, your Wi-Fi unit is off, your VC, everything's just off. That electromagnetic vibration no longer exists in your home. And you're like, whoa. Hmm. And there's a silence there that you can create. And there's something about that vibration that we're living with subconsciously every day. And it puts a stress on us.
Mm-hmm.
it certainly puts a stress on us. And the right aim, I mean, I know these are little things, but these little things add up. And this is why people go on vacations. This is why people move out of their 4,000-square-foot homes to spend so much money to go to a little cabin out in the woods. Because we desire those intimate spaces. We really, truly do. This is the way we've evolved in the past 2 million years of our history, to be able to see each other, to not have rooms that scatter about and disconnect us from each other. We were designed to be in community with each other. And what used to put us in community was the source, was fire, was the hearth of a home. And that was the fireplace. And there was no, you know, AC or, I mean, heating units up in your bedroom that you could go hang out in at night. Everybody would be around that hearth. And when I was taught that, or when somebody told me that story, I went, oh, my Lord. I go, what is the hearth of today? The hearth of today is the television in the living room.
Very large one.
Very large one. And I'm like, oh, no. I mean, I don't want to knock down TV or anything, but, I mean, there's something that doesn't feel quite right about that being the hearth.
You can knock down TV. I think it's not meant for organic matter.
So. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously we can have a debate about TV, whatever. I'm not really wanting to engage in a conversation about TV, but I am. It's just there's something that doesn't feel right. Nobody would be like, you know what? That's the goal of human beings, to have the TV as the hearth. And for me, I guess in nature, I'll finish my little answer here by what happens. A little story about when you walk out into nature. And if you spend like a weekend out in the woods and you're backpacking, and what you start to notice is that everything feels like it belongs. The bird sounds, to the tree that's fallen over and the moss has now grown over it, and you're like, wow, this all belongs here. There's something about the way nature makes everything fit so seamlessly together. And then when you're out there, you'll notice anything that doesn't belong immediately, like that. You'll see a plastic bottle, and you'll notice it 100 feet away. You'll see like a tire or something. You'll be, whoa, what's that doing? Immediately. You'll hear a chainsaw in some distant background, and be like, whoa, that doesn't belong here. And you're out there, and you're feeling that natural component that makes up our biological past. And what happens is when you come back into, quote-unquote, civilization, you walk back, you drive back into civilization, and you start to realize immediately what doesn't belong. You're like, what is with this strip mall? Mm-hmm. Oh, how did I become used to this? Mm-hmm. And you immediately realize, because this is how human beings work. I mean, sort of falls into my story of comfort, but we adapt. We adapt and we disassimilate to our environments. And so we're assimilating to things that subconsciously don't feel good. Like, this doesn't belong here, this big Walmart that's just plumped in the middle of town. I might get used to it, but it doesn't belong. And so that question, that experience, and then that question led me to go into the more intricate parts of stuff, like the refrigerator humming. Does that belong? Does that belong?
Hmm.
Does what relationship do I want with my house?
Right.
And that's where I'm at, and I want to develop that, the techniques, the skill to build my own home, but also to just be able to have a relationship with it. To really have a relationship with it.
It's so beautiful. It makes my heart sing to hear you talk this way. Yes, we are impacted beyond belief, our world system that's around us right now, and this is a beautiful, simple way to start integrating back with nature in a place
yeah.
that you spend a good portion of our time.
Yeah.
So with your projects, what has that led for your inspiration from building? You mentioned that you were going to work on another project in
mm-hmm.
Sedona, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like?
I guess the biggest the individual process for me is to how do I take this passion, this knowledge that I've gained from my mentor and from reading books and from the actual experience of hands in the dirt, how do I translate that into like work, into like can I get paid to create this environment which I actually believe in? I mean, this is something I believe in. How do I make this work? How do I make this comparable to some sort of income in my life so I can survive on doing this? So the biggest challenge for me is that transition, but I think that's how business works in general. How do we create wealth for ourselves? And wealth is way and far greater than money, but how can I create wealth for myself with relationship, with everything? So one of those things that we have to deal with is money. So the biggest challenge for me is to create projects where I can earn something and feel good about that, and the person that I'm working with also feels good about what I'm creating and the process that they're involved in. So that's been the biggest challenge, because I'm not a business-oriented kind of dude. I'm just like, I don't know, I'd rather just go volunteer places. And so the biggest challenge recently in my life is to try to make what I so love in this art, how do I earn an income from that? How do I feel good about the contribution I make and feel validated by getting something in return for that work that will help me survive, whether it's money or a trade or whatever it is that we can work out? So I guess that's my biggest, the thing that I sort of struggle with most, because the work I don't struggle with. I'll work 13 hours a day. I just am the kind of person that it doesn't feel like work to me. It just feels like relationship, truly. It feels like I'm like I've fallen in love with a woman and I'm just spending time with her.
Right. Nice. So what are you doing in Sedona then?
Oh, I'm going to build an earthen floor for a yurt.
Okay.
And then I'm going to build this sculptural fire pit for ceremonies on these beautiful people's property. So we're going to lay down an earthen floor for a yurt that we're going to set up on this beautiful foundation. And the earthen floor, what's beautiful about an earthen floor, which I'm really excited about, is that there's some dubious features in like conventional floors, like concrete floors, that it's just really strange for our feet to walk on, because we're used to like having some sort of shock absorbing qualities in the stuff that we walk on. And what earthen floors are so cool, first off, the look is beautiful, but also it sort of shapes, and there's these irregularities in it, just slight irregularities that when you walk on it barefoot, there's something really natural about that. And there's not that stress on your hips and knees as we've all felt when you're walking on concrete or these flat floors, which flat obviously is not part of nature. There's nothing really truly that flat in nature. There's always these tiny irregularities. So with the earthen floor, not only do you get that, but you also get this big thermal mass sitting on your floor. So when you build with passive solar design in mind, what happens is that floor absorbs that radiant heat from the sun and or from your fireplace, and it holds on to that heat. And it's really quite incredible to walk on an earthen floor. I mean, it's very durable. It's beautiful. And it's definitely got that thermal nature working for it. So I'm super excited to build this little earthen floor for them.
Mm, nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you clean it?
Well, what you do is after you lay your last, your finished layer, which is a 3/4 inch clay, sand, super chopped straw layer down. You let that dry, and if you have the right proportions to sand to clay mix, you won't get any cracks, initially anyway. And then you coat it with linseed oil.
Mm.
You have a, and you coat it probably three or four times, and you let that, you really let that get absorbed into the clay, into the floor. And what that does is creates this sort of waterproof barrier for your floor. So you can literally mop it.
Nice.
Yeah, and people cut the linseed oil. I mean, there's lots of different ways. That's what's beautiful about natural building is that there's no one way to do any of this. There's a multitude of ways. And what my mentor would always tell me, it's not green building or natural home building or cob building. It's sensible building.
Right.
Sensible building. So within this, you know, people cut their linseed oil with turpentine. People have used beeswax in linseed oil mixes. And there's this whole testing and... And again, it's a process, so we're all learning what might be best, but realize that every house is individual. So with this one, we're definitely going to use linseed oil, but like I said, you can use just about anything your mind can think of. But one thing that's really important is that you don't seal that floor. There's no, like, hard seal,
right?
You know, with latex or something, because then you're creating a problem there.
Yeah, that sounds
with the living component.
Cool. Sounds scary. Sorry. I'm very sensitive to nature. You're just like giving me a heart palpitation.
Oh, Lord.
And then, if you're wanting to create Maya with your newfound love and passion for building and reacquainting people with the home, and living in an organic home or structure, or working in an organic structure, are you open to being hired?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Of course.
So how can people get a hold of you to do that?
Oh, my good Lord. Well, Suzanne, well, they can do that in a multitude of ways. I will certainly hand out my email address, which is mateolundgren@gmail.com. Super simple.
That sounds good. And we'll include links, too, but...
Yes, and from there, I mean, what I've done, what's happened is that I've started to create a little network. And this is how it works with anything. If you're traveling around, you're talking about what you love, and this is what I try to teach people, like really engage with people that, just people you come in contact with the things that you're passionate about, a book you've read or a podcast you've listened to, and engage in that because you start creating a network. You start creating a network either with people or within yourself. You're like, wow, I've learned something today. And what happens is people feel that energy because it's authentic. And then you just, all of a sudden I get emails where people are like, hey, I'm thinking about building a home. I heard you're really into Cobb. What do you think about this? And I just sort of become a consultant. And I'm just writing people, and it's fun to engage with strangers like that. It's super, it really is. It's really fun. So, yes, I'm definitely up for hire. I mean, I think I've manifested some great things in the upcoming future for me, working with a really visionary stonemason, and I don't know, the list will keep going, and I'm happy to at least consult on anything. I mean, I think that's the most important, to engage with each other in a way where we're sharing information, not saying I'm some sort of expert, because I don't feel like I am. I'm just I'm a component to this whole beautiful process.
Yes, and talk a little bit, you shared a little bit about community, having personally had the opportunity to work with some different indigenous communities, and, you know, they live basically in small dwellings together, and then outside those small dwellings where the hearth is or the beehive fireplaces for the family to gather, there's a gathering point, whether it's a piazza or it's a plaza,
mm-hmm.
whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
If you can share a little bit about the element of community and giving and receiving and how nature models this for us.
I think first off, the way just building with Cobb and mixing the material, the way you do that, you actually need a community to do that with. You need people. If you're doing this by yourself, there's something that is actually really missing from the process. and I've done it. I've mixed Cobb by myself, and there's something that is missing. And when you have 12 people standing around with, like, partnering up and dancing in a on this tarp with full of mud and mixing the thing, and then you've got music playing and conversation happening, what happens is people start to let go, in a sense. You can have business people that come to a workshop, and they're all, they come with their notebooks, and they're like, oh, I want to write down my notes, and they're you know, touching the clay with their fingertips, trying not to get dirty, and in about a half an hour, what happens is they unleash like they're 7 years old again. You know, it's like you all of a sudden, what happened, the clay is like the bridge here. It's like, wait, I'm not only playing in mud, but I'm creating something beautiful and functional and real. And for me, I think that builds community instantly. So when I go places, what I really like to do is to invite as many people as I can on a project. Like, let's do this. And there might be some labor-intensive things that if you're not wanting to engage in that, that's totally fine. But let's talk. Let's watch. Let's see. Let's be a part of that process. And that community that's built, oh, my God, that's what I think started this whole thing for me, is like, oh, my God, you have to have people to help build this. And you can imagine a neighborhood being built by the neighborhood. All of a sudden, you create relationships with your neighbors instead of it just being a friendly wave or a friendly, oh, I don't see you over there getting in your car, you know, whatever it is. What you've done now is you've invited people in your community to build with you. And I think, I mean, that's what I call an intentional community. That's what I call a neighborhood is with Cobb. I mean, Cobb is sort of that bridge for that. So you've got that component in the natural building that I so think can help change this whole paradigm we find ourselves living in, where we build walls and we don't know the people that live next to us. And even in an urban setting, I think there's lots of things we can do. This isn't just some sort of like you got to go in the backwoods and build some weird hobbit home, but how can we use these techniques and this model, this natural model, within urban design? Because we can, and people are in places like Portland and Seattle and Ashland and basically in the Northwest right now. It's taken off big time, but how can we incorporate these things everywhere? And that's sort of my mission right now, because once we start incorporating these things, you have to actually call out to the community. So it builds that. There's something really special about that. And I think in indigenous cultures, indigenous people, there was no other option, really.
Right.
That was it.
Yep.
And it created community. It just was the function of living. It was like there. But now we have so many options. It's incredible and beautiful. It's the abundance. It's magic. But I think we've pushed ourselves past that sweet spot. And we just got to come back to it a little bit. It's not about destroying everything that we have and destroying these homes that are already built, but it's about understanding and respecting our biological past and what truly triggers that passion, what truly triggers that true engagement in authentic living. And that, I think, is with natural, I mean, obviously considering nature in all of this is important. So instead of being an invasive species, which I feel like we've become on some level as human beings, we start connecting more into the natural environment, into our natural way of being, which was how we lived for tens of thousands of years.
Billions.
We had to.
Probably billions.
Yeah.
Because we don't see the result, you know,
right,
of invasiveness from archaeology.
Right.
So,
well, you're using real materials there, materials that when you're done with them, they just go back to nature. They don't go into the landfill.
Exactly. Well,
right.
And even if you look at when you migrate back out west, and if you happen to stop by Hopi, or if you have already,
mm-hmm.
you know, that tribe has migrated over and over and over again. And here they are on one of the mesas. They have only 5 of the original families left, and they have a very small imprint on our planet. And hold a lot of space around them. It's really something to be said for it.
Yeah.
So can you share a couple of people are interested? I know you mentioned it to a friend of mine that I connected you to, the name of a book that you recommended to read or a couple resources for people to connect with and your website where you're cataloging and writing right now.
Yes. Well, there's so many resources out there for natural home building. One that a lot of comp builders subscribe to as the start. Obviously, this isn't the handbook that you use forever, but it's just a good start. It's called The Hand Sculpted House, and it's by Yanto Evans and Michael Smith and Linda Smiley. And this book is just a great overview of why. It gives you the whys of their individual process, and then it gets really in depth with the house, how to build it, what materials to use, how to make choices, and really, I mean, what they talk about in the book is what resources do you have available? Do you have time or do you have money? And if you've got time, well, then you can really cut your costs considerably. You know, they get into the intricate details of the real details of building your own house, which is there's lots of costs involved. And I think the most basic cost is time versus money. So that book is really incredible. I mean, truly any comp builder knows about that book and has at least read some, if not all of it. So it's definitely a Bible that you should carry around with yourself.
the new Bible.
The new comp Bible.
The new comp Bible. Nothing. And your writing, are sharing your blog with photos and expressions.
Mm-hmm.
You want to share a little bit about that and your intention?
Sure. First off, my blog is Peeling Back the Onion Now .blogspot.com, and I guess my blog is truly about my process. So no matter where I was, I mean, recently I volunteered down in Breezy Point, which is Rockaway Island off of New York City, trying to help clean up the mess that Hurricane Sandy left behind, and quite a experience I had. The stories that were shared with me, the relationships I built with the people that are living down there, and their experience was really so life-changing as anything is, but this one was just really potent lesson for me as I helped with basically anything, gutting houses and whatever the case. So that's the most recent thing I've been writing about, but I also have, you know, a lot of Cobb building experiences within that blog, and I definitely, my goal and intention with the blog is just to share my process. So whether that's about Cobb or love or life or living or whatever it might be, it's just a nice forum for me to express.
Hmm. Well, we like hearing your expression, so I appreciate you sending that vibration out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And inspiration. If you can, we've talked about water in the past,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And something that is still really obviously important to all of us since we're mostly water.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share about your journey from the home, the womb that you've been creating, and how
mm-hmm.
you see its integration and the knowledge that is shared between the element of water and earth?
I mean, like you said, we are made up of mostly water. I mean, water sort of, at least according to our Western sciences, water is the makeup of the universe, of real life in the universe. It's all based on this molecule. And it's really, just thinking of that, like truly that we're all these components that are made up of this H2O is something that really sends shivers up and down my spine. So with that, in our modern world, what kind of relationship do we have with water? And with agriculture using so much of the water and the polluting, the diverting of water that goes on with our modern society, it's really challenged our relationship. And so with me, what's happened with me is that Daniel Vitalis, who's a good friend of mine, he sort of brought, sort of challenged me in his little YouTube videos about finding spring water. And just diving into this relationship with, like, living water. And I was like, whoa, living water. That's a great concept, living water. Because he talks about the industrialization of water and how that mechanical process of cleaning it sort of destroys the fabric of the chemical structures of the water that we're ingesting. So if we're thinking about our health and our planet's health, I mean, I think first we've got to look at our own. So with me on this little 300-day adventure, what's been a component of that is finding springs all along the way. So I'm traveling around finding these sources that are bringing up water from Middle Earth and giving us this mineral-rich, nutrient-dense water. And there's something about that when you put that into your body that really turns you on in a different way than, I don't know, this chlorinated, fluoridated municipal water that a lot of us have to manage and deal with and strategize to deal with.
Well, and I want to let a, can I let a secret out?
Yes.
Because this is a year to, like, let all the secrets out. Those springs will never dry out.
Yes.
Because what you said in the beginning, like, the universe, the molecule, that if that occurs, guess what? The world system's over. Like, this, it's done. Like, this system's done. So to hold that, don't have to buy into anything else but that.
Yes. Oh, I really feel that. Full on, I really truly feel that. I mean, there's something much greater than we can imagine. I know you know this, and there's something that is so magical about magical about the mystery of this universe we live in, and water is one of those teachers that are a part of that, and there's a wisdom there that I think, you know, at least tasting spring water, not from a plastic bottle, but if you go out and harvest it, if you go find it, there's something there that can be learned. And I don't know exactly how to explain that, except for go on the adventure yourself, go to findaspring.com, which is a website that sort of shares all sorts of springs around the whole entire country, and go find one near your house, and then go taste that. And you're tasting a bit of, like, Earth's history. Mm-hmm. You're tasting a bit of water's wisdom. And that's very poetic, I guess, in a way, but there's something really real about that and physical when it goes in your body, and it's like your cells turn on and you just open up your eyes. You're like, whoa, that's water. That is something really water. So I guess with natural homes, one thing we've got to consider is how we get our water. So I think digging wells is definitely a component of that, or finding a natural spring-fed water near your property or on your property. These things have to be considered when we're looking at places where we're going to inhabit. Water, because water is the source. Just as fire, just as shelter, just as the air we breathe, the water we drink gives us life. In my design, my natural design, that's a component that I don't let run away. I don't run away from that component ever. It's always right there in the, at least somewhere in the front of my consciousness going, okay, well, what about the water? What about the water?
What about the water?
What about the water?
You're right there.
Yeah.
You're the water.
I'm the water. I am the water.
You are the water. So did you happen to bring some of your magnificent, inspiring poetry or something, a piece of poetry that inspires you to share?
Sure, of course. I always have poetry just hanging out with me because that's one way I also express myself. Would you like me to share a poem that I've written?
I love poetry. I love to write it and I love to hear it.
Cool. Well, this poem was sort of a release for me when I was thinking about the stories we tell each other and the perspectives we can take. And it was inspired by you know, lots of books I've read, but one in particular with Michael Pollan, who was talking about plant perspectives and how things are completely, the world is, if you look at it through a different lens, through the lens of a plant, the whole story is totally different. The whole story is totally different. And you lose control. You lose total control. So this is sort of a story and an expression in a release based on that. Okay. Life is all about perspective. This woman gets sick. She doesn't know what it is, so she runs to her medicine cabinet. Go away, you nasty stomach illness. Vitamin, soup, sleep, mom calling, but she can't shake it. So she goes to the doctor to get some tests to discover her ailment. What's wrong with me, doc? He looks at her and says, you're not sick. You're pregnant. And in 1 second, 180 degrees, she is healed instantaneously. I'm pregnant? Her perspective shifts. She's not sick. Nothing happened, no surgery, no fixing anything, just a conscious shift, an instant aha. Life works just like this because life is all about perspective. Life is a story. It's just a bunch of stories, so we have to pay attention to who's telling it. Let's take U.S. history as if there's a narrative that could define it. Like, don't you think the Native Americans tell its story a little differently than European historians did? Like, who's telling us the whole truth? And is there such a thing? Maybe it's not right or wrong, just everything in between. It's like when a breakup happens. How do I tell the story of us, and how does she? Like, the story our friends tell will sound just a little differently. Like, your parents might say, good riddance, you both just weren't all that happy. But you're always left saying, well, they just don't know the whole story. Because life is all about perspective. It's sort of like if it's snowing. Somebody might look out their window and feel absolute disgust. Like, why is it always so cold outside and this winter sucks? And they get all depressed, every thought stained in lethargy. They interact with people like mustard on ice cream. It's gross. And they think, if only it wasn't snowing. Out a different window, looking at the same snow, their neighbor is in complete and utter joy. It's wintertime. Snowboarding, snow forts, snowball fights. It's like they came out of fire. It's like they came out from hibernating, and you can't walk by them without noticing. I'm just happy because it's snowing. And then they both walk up to me, and the one says, you want to know why I'm sad? Because of the snow. And the other says, you want to know why I'm happy? Because of the snow. And I look at them both and say, you're both crazy. It's not because of the snow at all. You are sad because you chose to be. You are happy because you decided to be. The snow is neutral. It's just falling. It has no power over how you're feeling. The snow can't make you happy or sad or anything in between. Only you can. But we sure become accustomed to blaming, to living in the world without taking any responsibility, of missing what is and believing some made-up story. Because it's just snow, and it's just being. You control your emotional reality because life is all about perspective. And so that's like level one on the Xbox game shit. That's like, oh, I get it, and everyone beats that board. But what about the next level shit? Like level nine. Like all of humanity just quits when they get to it. It's too hard. Like when you look out the window and see your girlfriend cheating on you. You did what? You did what? How could you do this to me? You betrayed me. You ruined me. You ripped my heart out and left it to bleed. And all your friends agree. And they support this self-made reality. Why not? I would feel this way, they say. But come on now. Isn't this just snow? I mean, this is next level shit, but it's just snow. Realizing that she didn't do that to you, that it was her own story. Recognize that this world doesn't happen to you. All of your experience is like a foreign language in desperate need of interpretation. And you are your own interpreter. You decide what's said. Your choice, not mine. And I'm not even saying we've got to get there. Maybe it's not that important. But that shit is like revolutionary, I think. You beat that level, and now you're transcending a million-year-old human pattern. That's serious higher consciousness. Advanced and ready to do what's next. What is next? It's just snow. It's all just snow, isn't it? And life is all about perspective.
Wow. You rock the house every time.
Oh, Lord.
We need to have, like, a poetry jam next time we're in the same place.
Let's do it.
Wow. I don't even, there's nothing to say to that.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, I've been dealing with that for a long time, that thinking about perspective, and it's truly just snow, right?
It is snow, and having studied architecture and drawing perspective, and now you're cluing me into a dream, you don't realize until you take time to learn to draw that how it is perspective, because everyone could be drawing the same still life, and every drawing looks different.
Yes, that's a great example.
Yeah, and so, and there's no one perfect way.
Nope.
So.
No. Just the infinite possibility of our individuality, I think, is our ladder to the stars.
Yep.
Is that all the choices we make.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful to have these choices and to see enlightenment everywhere we go, because I don't think enlightenment is some sort of, like, I don't know, like gods and horses, you know, unicorns flying off and beautiful sunsets. I think enlightenment is right here, the day-to-day. The little things that we struggle with, the little stresses that we're like, I can't believe I actually worry about this stuff, but I can't help it. And all of that process and that practice, you find enlightenment within it all, within any breath you choose.
Yes. Oh, well said, Mateo.
Yes.
Well said. Well, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the air. I think I might try to encourage you to do that a little bit more often.
Sure. Maybe after my next adventure here, we'll have another conversation. I'll have something else I've learned that is driving me in a certain direction.
Definitely, and maybe I'll intercept you in the field. We'll do it live.
Yes.
So that sounds good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all your wisdom and your passion and inspiration. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's always a joy to talk with and communicate with somebody like-minded and on a similar path of just self-discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yes, hear, hear. Three cheers for self.
Three cheers.
Three cheers.
Salute.
Salute. Well, once again, I want to thank Mateo for joining us today and brightening my day and all of yours. We are going to sign out with an artist that he's brought to my attention, Nathaniel Ratliff. And we're going to do all three, a trio here, Wimp and Whale, Boil and Fight, and Break Man. So sit back for a little bit more entertainment and enjoy the music. And until next time, this is She signing out with a deep bow, a soft gaze, a belly full of laughter, and a namaste.
your eyes. Rub your eyes. I could try to tell you what it is, well, it's more than I. Well, it's more than I. We got them off the ground again. We're gonna wait till the sun lets us in. We got along fine without any friends. We got along right to think about. I was brakeman, the sharpest of all them, hoping to be there and it could. I was bum rush, and pardon the self lust, it wasn't always understood. I was a comb-man. I comb every shoreline. I wanted to damage just a few. Hoping in time it won't be swift enough, and they'll carry us away. I was a cold one, colder than ever. You feel the chill I left on you. Now back on the brake lines, and steeper than I climb. Well, if there's one, well, it be you. Leaving no more.